John O'Brien is the president for Catholics for Choice. He joins us now on the phone from Washington, D.C. John, thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you.
So, John, tell us a little about Catholics for Choice mission, and why was it started the same year that abortion was made legal in the U.S.?
A group of Catholic women in New York were very perplexed when they saw the role the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops was playing in opposing legalization of abortion in the United States. At that particular point in history, many women were self-aborting or having backstreet illegal abortions, causing them great pain, suffering, and even death. The idea that these Catholic women had was that when the bishops spoke on issues relating to abortion and sexual health, they were not speaking on behalf of ordinary Catholics. At Catholics for Choice, we strive to be an expression of Catholicism as it's lived by ordinary people. We're part of the great majority of faithful Catholics in the Church who disagree with the dictates of the Vatican on matters related to sex, marriage, family life, and motherhood.
Catholics for Choice believes that it's women and their families who pay the price every time theocracy trumps democracy in the debate over women's health care. What do you say to those Catholics who are unyieldingly opposed to women's reproductive freedoms?
Well, I think one of the most important things to concentrate on is that it's interesting from Poland to Portugal, the Philippines, or Pittsburgh in the United States. Whenever Catholics are polled and whenever they're asked what they believe about sexual and reproductive health, an overwhelming majority of Catholics have a very liberal view when it comes to the use of contraception to prevent unplanned pregnancy in the first instance, or indeed when it's necessary for a woman to have an abortion. And what we've seen the world over, we've seen Catholics, really the majority of Catholics, disagree with what the hierarchy has to say on these issues.
Do you think Catholics' opinions would change if the papacy changed its own position regarding abortion rights and reproductive justice, or reproductive choice, rather?
I think that what's important is that when a legislator hears from a bishop, I think just as, you know, a legislator hears from people who are representatives of labor unions or employers' representative groups, the first question a legislator has to ask is what they're saying factually correct? And the second is, who are they representing? And I think that the same criteria that's applied to whether it be an environmental lobby group or a trade lobby group, the same criteria is not applied to religious leaders. Religious leaders are getting a pass on this. And in reality, very often, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops is not representing factually situations concerning sexual and reproductive health. And they certainly don't speak for constituents across the United States who are voters. So I think it's important that legislators really pay attention to how Catholics think and feel and how that affects the majority of people in the country. Because we shouldn't create legislation around the dictates of one particular religious view. America is a country of many religions, and there's many people who have no religion. And we really need to create legislation for all of the people, not just because the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops have a strong lobby on Capitol Hill.
And as a lot of us know, many low-income women rely solely on government-run programs for access to reproductive health care services. What impact do you think the Catholic hierarchy's ban on contraception and abortion has had on women's lives, especially on the lives of low-income women?
You know, people who have financial means will always be able to circumvent any prohibition. But those who are poor are the ones who suffer. When you have to rely on the local hospital to secure your sexual and reproductive health services, if that local hospital is a Catholic-controlled hospital, they may receive taxpayer money to run the hospital, but very often they have some type of restrictions on what type of services they have available, and therefore people have to travel sometimes many miles, which is sometimes a total impossibility for those who are poor to travel those miles and that distance in order to be able to access sexual and reproductive health services. So it's absolutely critical that those services be made available or that women be accommodated, especially poorer women.
So what role did Catholics for Choice play in the recent federal health care debates?
We have been very active in both supporting the idea, because as a social justice organization, as an organization that's concerned about poorer people, and we are in favor of health care reform. It looks like we're going to end up with just health insurance reform. But even so, we believe that it can have a tremendously positive impact for the poorer folks in the United States of America. The sad part of it is that those who are anti-choice and those who, quite frankly, are against healthcare reform injected into this debate a concern, a false concern, a red herring, if you like, that federal funds, that taxpayer funds, would be used to fund abortions. We in the pro-choice community always knew that the healthcare debate was not going to result in an advance for abortion rights and services, which obviously we are committed to and would like to see. But what we've actually seen instead is that because of a weak Democratic Party, a Democratic Party that has many people elected in the last election cycle who are not in favor of the party's platform that supports a woman's right to choose, we've seen Democrats vote in favor of a Stupak-Pitts amendment in the House and the Nelson amendment in the Senate. And these go beyond the idea of the Hyde Amendment in banning federal funds. They would actually not allow even people within insurance, private insurance arrangements, to be able to access abortion easily. And I think that that's a huge problem. It's the equivalent of, it's like passing an Americans with Disability Act and actually saying that it doesn't apply to partially sighted people. The idea that we could have health care or health insurance reform and discriminate against women's choices really beggars belief that it is truly health reform, and it certainly discriminates against women. It certainly will make it harder, if they are successful, in women being able to get abortion in certain circumstances.
So how effective do you think the anti-choice lobby, which includes, you know, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops or Catholics United and Catholics and Alliance for the Common Good, has been in subordinating women's access to reproductive health services?
I think that the those who are opposed to sexual and reproductive health have been extraordinarily successful in the last number of years. I think that part of the reason why the anti-choice lobby has been so successful is that after the election of John Kerry, I think that the Democratic Party experienced a major crisis of confidence. Some strategists in the party believed that the reason why John Kerry lost was because of contentious issues, one of the issues being a woman's right to choose. There's the polling and the polling analysis didn't show that the reason why folks didn't vote for John Kerry was because of these issues. The polling analysis actually showed that John Kerry, in spite of the fact that many folks liked him, was not a candidate that resonated with the voters. It was as simple as that. But there was a certain cadre of strategists within the Democratic Party who decided that what they were going to do was that they were going to reach out to values-based voters. And I think what that actually meant, there's nothing wrong with reaching out to values-based voters and indeed religious voters, but some would argue that the polling would suggest that religious voters and people of faith were always with the Democratic Party. Maybe not the loud fundamentalist preachers that you see on TV, but certainly people of faith across the United States had voted for the Democratic Party in a similar way that other people of faith had voted for the Republican Party. They didn't have a particular problem. What they did do, though, is they fielded a number of more conservative Democratic candidates, some of whom do not support a woman's right to choose. And as a result of that, those candidates were elected. Those candidates are in the House and in the Senate. And to some extent, what we've seen in recent times is those candidates driving what the position of the Democratic Party is on some of these issues around sexual and reproductive health.
What is your vision for the future, then, regarding reproductive rights and access to abortion for all women?
Now is the time that we really need to, in the pro-choice movement, we need to come together and have a visionary approach towards the future. The reality is that before Roe v. Wade, women in the United States died as a result of not being able to access a woman's right to choose. You know, they can pass all the laws that they like against abortion and restricting abortion, but women still need a right to choose. I've seen lawmakers in the last number of years come together. This is lawmakers who are pro-life and lawmakers who are pro-choice to support prevention legislation, to support the idea of making contraception more available, making sex education more available, and supporting women who do want to continue their pregnancies financially. I think that that's a wonderful development that can do a lot to reduce unplanned pregnancy. But no matter how much contraception and sex education we have, the truth, the real truth, is that some people get pregnant in circumstances that it is impossible for them to continue the pregnancy. The right to choose, the right of a woman to determine if she is pregnant or not, I think is a very essential aspect of our freedom and our democracy. You know, healthcare can't be just for the rich. And the woman's right to choose good sexual and reproductive health, that also can't just be for the rich. It really is part of our American values and should be part of the great tapestry that we create when we look at what makes this country a strong country and a country that really looks after all of the people.
John O'Brien, President for Catholics for Choice, thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Well, thank you very much.